good morning. So the topic that we posted is a suffik the oraisa, suffik the rabbana lakula, essentially. And the thinking was that I think the theme of all of the Bein HaSemesterim topics is related to Shev Shmaisa topics, things that are discussed in that classic sefer. So the thought was, along the lines of Sveikos and related topics, to talk about Safik Darabanan. I think Rabbi Hirschlita is talking about Safik Daraisa tomorrow. So today, maybe we'll focus on Safik Darabanan. In order to talk about that, we really need to talk about the whole theme of Dinim Darabanan. They're very much intertwined topics. Essentially, how Dinim Darabanan are formed and how they're characterized, and that very much connects to the question of how it is and why it is that we are told as a matter of policy to be makel in issues of suffering when it's a matter of Darabanan. So just to get into that topic a little bit in the broad sense, so we know that this is the general rule. It's an idea that comes up all the time, certainly in the Sifrei Halacha. It's most clearly stated in the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara says that if we have a matter of unresolved attitude, for some reason, suffik in English is always translated as doubt. I don't know why that is, because it doesn't really fit the context. You know, doubt means you think something isn't true. So really, suffik, we don't know. When we talk about a suffik, we generally mean 50-50. So we essentially mean it's indeterminate. That's really a better English word for it. So when we don't know what the story is, when something is indeterminate, so the Gemara says that b'shal Torah holech achar ha-machmir, that if it's a matter of Torah law, we are stringent, and b'shal sofrim, if it's a matter of dinim d'rabbanan, so we are allowed to be maker. Essentially telling us that if it's a question of iser, so then if it's a matter that's midrabbanan, we're allowed to assume that it's mutter. It's a matter that's daraisa, so we have to worry that it is aser. And if it's a question of a nasei, of some kind of a positive obligation, so if it's a matter that's drabanan, we have the right to assume that we're not obligated. And if it's a matter that's daraisa, so we have to worry that we are obligated. And that's how we carry out the practice. So there are a lot of details, which will be a little bit outside of our scope for today, as to what the parameters are of, let's say, Safek Rabbanan. Are you always allowed to be Mako? Are you encouraged sometimes to be Machmir? Does it depend on the effect? So just to give one example of that, there is a often quoted statement of the Ran. The Ran, in the last parak of Psachim, discusses the question of Heseba by Dalek Kosos. And the Gemara says that there's a question as to whether or not Dalek Kosos, which are an obligation to Rabbanan Pesach night, whether they require Haseba. Haseba itself is probably the Rabbanan, that's itself a discussion, but certainly if we're talking about the mitzvah, that's the Rabbanan of Dalek Kosos, so then Haseba in that context should be a question of rabbinic law. And the Gemara has a suffix as to what the rule is. And the basic problem is that the Gemara tells us that we know that you do need Haseba for two of the Dalek Kosos. But we don't know which two. We don't know if it's the first two or the last two. So our practice is then to have Haseba for all four. So the Ran asks, well, if we're dealing here with rabbinic law, so why don't we say that Safek Darabanan Lakula? Let's say that we're allowed to be Mekel, and therefore assume that you don't need Haseba for anything, I guess. That would seem to be the possible conclusion, to say we'll be Mekel by all of the Dalek Kosos and not do Haseba at all. So the Ran says a couple of principles in dealing with this. You wouldn't say Safek Rabbanan in such a case, really for two reasons. One is, he says, it's a milsa de les beit tircha, that it's a relatively easy chumrah to just do haseba for all of them. I guess it depends on how comfortable you are drinking in a reclining position. But the assumption is that it's not a hard chumrah, so therefore, maybe even when the din is drabana and we're still machmer if it's easy enough to do, if it's a matter that doesn't have great tircha involved. And the other principle, which gets more discussion, is that you wouldn't say Safek Darabanan in such a case. Because what would that mean practically? It would have to mean one of two things. Either it means you're going to pick one set to do Haseba and not to do it by the other. And it says that you can't do it because it's illogical. There's no svara why it should be the first two rather than the second two, or vice versa. So it doesn't make sense to apply Safek to Rabbanan Lakula that way. And the other possibility is to say, don't do Haseba by any of them. Say, by each coast, you have a din of Safek to Rabbanan Lakula. Says you wouldn't do that either, because that means you're negating a din completely. And that's not the kind of application that we have for Safek to Rabbanan Lakula. We don't say that if we know there's a din, the Gemara's telling us that there's a concept of Haseba by Dalakosis. We just don't know how it should be applied, so we can't apply it in a way that's going to make it disappear. We're going to do it like this, there's going to be no Haseba at all by Dalakoso, so that's not a fair application of Safek to Rabbanan Lakula. We do it in a way that's more Makel rather than more Machmir, but not in a way that makes the Halacha disappear. So from that Ron, you see a couple of principles, and this Ron is often quoted the Halacha in other contexts, you see a couple of principles of how Safek to Rabbanan Lakula works. That, first of all, it means that you take the more makel version of a halacha. It doesn't mean that you either let a halacha disappear or apply a halacha in an illogical fashion that doesn't have any explanation of kula or chumra to it. It just means randomly picking one side or the other. That also isn't an application of safek to rabbanan lakula. And also this other notion that if it's relatively easy, we're still encouraged to go l'chumra, to worry about the safek, even if we otherwise could have said safek to rabbanan lakula. Okay, so far so good. Everything makes sense. So with that very brief introduction, so the existence of the klal of Safek to Rabbanan Lakula is a major battle point between the Rambam and the Ramban. Now there is a very fundamental question as to where our Didim de Rabbanan come from. How do you know that we have to follow Didim de Rabbanan at all? And here, there was a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban, that the Rambam in two places, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, in the Shrashim, and also in Hilchos Mamrim, in Perek Aleph Halacha Beis, the Rambam says that the obligation to follow the new laws that Rabbanan promulgate is based on the Pasuk in Parshas Shoftim. The Pasuk there tells us that Ki Poli Mimcha Dover, it's going to happen that you're not going to know what to do, how to follow the law. So the Kamta of Alisa, you should get up and you should go to the reigning authority, whoever that is, and whatever they tell you, you have to follow. The Sisa Kashir Yerucha, Lo Sasa Menadavar, Shia Gidulacha, Yaman Usmal. That you shouldn't deviate from that which is being told to you, not to the right or to the left. Now, that question of Yamin Usmal, what exactly that means practically, is a big discussion. It's not a political term, right and left. It's a much more recent usage. It's not a political term. It's not a religious term. But there is a lot to discuss about what are the practical implications of that last part of the pasuk, Yamin Usmal. It's a little bit outside our scope for today. It involves a whole other sugya. But for now, just to focus on the idea that you shouldn't deviate, well, saucer, you're not allowed to defy what the authority tells you. So the Rambam writes that that means that you have to follow even new halachos that are innovated. That if the rabbinic authority creates new dinim, what we call dinim d'rabbanan, so then that is binding because of the pasuk of Lo Sasur. And the Ramban disagreed. And the Ramban, in his commentary to the Sefer HaMitzvos, took great issue with this position for a number of reasons. Among them, it's just a question of interpreting the psukim, that the context in Shoftim, where the Torah says that you're supposed to go to the rabbinic authority, what kind of authority do they have? So now it's a time of transition in the U.S. government, so it's time of appointing officials to the U.S. government, so we know that to use the model of the U.S. government, we have three branches. So we have the executive branch, which is the focus right now, but we also have a separation of powers, which involves a legislative branch and a judiciary. And they are separate and distinct under the American government system. So the legislature makes the laws, and the judiciary interprets the law. So officially, if everything is in place and everyone's doing their jobs the way they're defined, so the judges, the courts in the American system, the Supreme Court and the lower courts, are there to interpret the existing law, And they're not supposed to tell you what they think the law should be. They're supposed to tell you what they think the law is. It doesn't always work that way, but that's the idea. And the legislature, they are the ones who get the job of creating a new law. They can't deal with the existing laws. They can come and tell you that they think this should be a law or this law should be changed. That's their job. So what the Rambam is describing here is combining the two roles, that the rabbinic authority has both judiciary and legislative authority. So when you come to them with a question, they have binding authority to tell you what the Torah is asking of you, and they also have legislative authority that they can make new laws. And the Ramban doesn't agree with that. Where do you see that from the Pasuk? The Pesukim seem to be addressing judiciary authority, that you have a question, how to apply the existing Torah law. You want to know, what does the Torah ask of me? So that's called judiciary authority, that the rabbinic authority can tell you this is what the Torah asks of you, and that's binding. You're obligated to listen to their interpretation. But we don't see from this context in Shoftim that there is legislative authority, that if they want to say, listen, the Torah says this, but we think we should also tell you to do that or not to do this. So that we don't necessarily know about from this context. And therefore, that's a chiddush. That's not necessarily the case. And the Ramban disagrees that that's what the Pesukim are saying. But the Ramban has a different question also. And that's really what's most relevant to what we're talking about here. The Ramban says, Rambam, according to you, it's going to come out that every din d'rabbanan is essentially a din min ha-Torah. Not only that, but it's essentially an iser min ha-Torah. Because if one is to violate a din d'rabbanan, Rabbi Maimonides, you're telling me that you're violating the iser d'araisa of los aser. So if that's true, what right do we have to have any differentiation between dinim d'rabbanan and dinim d'araisa? And that most prominently refers to our topic here, Safek Drabanan Lakula. It's not the only difference. There are a number of ways in which we are more makel with Dinim Drabanan than with Daraisis, different ways in which we distinguish. But most prominently, this question of Safek is what comes to mind first. And the Ramban's question is, what right do you have to make such a distinction? If you, the rule is Safek Daraisa Luchumra, so then that should apply also to all the dinim that the Rabbanan create, because according to you, it all comes out of los aser. So that's this major fundamental question that this klal of Safek Rabbanan Lekula provokes, just in terms of figuring out how we relate to dinim to Rabbanan. It's a major battle issue between the Rambam and the Ramban. Now, again, a broader topic, the Ramban's question really would seem to apply not just to the Pasuk of Lo Sasser, but to any Pasuk that you would suggest. If you're going to use a different Pasuk as the source, you'd probably have the same or similar problems. So you have a whole other question to discuss, which would probably also be outside of our scope for today, but the question of what does the Ramban think is the source for Dinim D'Rabbanan. Clearly, the Ramban is an Orthodox Jew who followed rabbinic law, so he felt that there is something that is mechayev one to follow Dinim D'Rabbanan. So if you subscribe to his attack against the Rambam, you have a question to answer on his side. You have to explain why rabbinic law is binding. But that question we won't focus on so much today. On a topic of Safek D'Rabbanan Lekula, if you want to just address this question of how is it that that klal could exist if indeed all the D'Rabbanans emanate from a Din D'Raisa, in this case specifically the idea of Los Aser. I should also mention that there are two Gemaras that seem to take a side in this, and that should make it open and shut, except in both cases the Gemaras are subject to interpretation. So one is the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Daf Yutes, where there the Gemara talks about the concept of Kavod Abrios. Gemara tells us that human dignity is a huge halachic mandate. It's something which carries a lot of weight and sometimes overrides other halachic principles. So the question is what the parameters are there. The Gemara first says that if it's a situation of Chil Hashem, if you're going to blatantly violate Torah law, so even Kavodah Brios is not going to allow that. So then the Gemara struggles with the fact that they also have a statement that Gadol Kavodah Brios Shadocha Lo Saseh Shebetorah. Kavodah Brios is so powerful that it's able to push away a Torah prohibition. So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about one specific Torah prohibition, that is the prohibition of Lo Saseh. And that essentially this Gemara really means to say, not that we would suspend Torah law, but that we would suspend particularly Dinim D'Rabbanan. So it sounds like that's a pretty strong proof for the Rambam, right? That essentially the Gemara is saying that Lo Saser is the source for Dinim D'Rabbanan. However, the Ramban actually invokes it as proof for his point, because the exact language of the Gemara is Kol milsa d'rabbanan asmachuhu alav d'lo saser. That all the dinim d'rabbanan is an asmachta, so to speak, on lo saser. Asmachta always leaves things a little bit confusing as to what exactly the level of authority is. So it could be that the Gemara is saying davka, not like the Ramban, that really these are dinim d'rabbanan that stand on their own. But there's an asmachta to the pasuk of lo saser. It doesn't actually come from Lo Saser. So this is one of the ambiguous Gemaras that a little bit gives us some support in either direction. And also there is a Gemara in the Sefer Shabbos in Daf Chof Gimel. The Gemara there has a very important discussion that's relevant to this whole issue, because the Gemara talks about the bracha on Neros Hanukkah. So we just had Hanukkah a few weeks ago, and we know we recite a bracha on lighting Hanukkah candles. So the Gemara has a discussion what the bracha is, how many brachas we make, and in that context, the Gemara asks, well, hold on a second, we're saying, Asher kedushana b'mitzvosa b'tzivano l'hadlik ner shel Hanukkah, heichan tzivano. Where do you find, in the whole Chumash, anywhere, where we were told to light Hanukkah candles? So the Gemara has first the response of Rav Nachman, that the answer is, lo saser. So it sounds there that at least Rav Nachman's position is that Lo Saser is the basis for the innovation of Hanukkah candles, for the Din D'Rabbanan of lighting Hanukkah candles. Now, on the other hand, it's not a slam dunk, because there's another opinion in the Gemara, the opinion of Rav Ivya. Now, Rav Ivya quotes a different pasuk in Chumash. So again, other psukim aren't going to help us that much. Of course, you have to figure out exactly how that's going to play out, but he quotes the pasuk in Hazinu, Shala Vicha V'Yageicha Zekeinecha V'Yomrulach. So on the one hand, you could say that Rav Nachman's opinion is a support for the Rambam. You could say the fact there's another opinion in the Gemara questions that, undermines that, or you could say, some say, well, that's only because Hanukkah candles is a completely new idea. That's not based in the Torah at all. So there you need to turn to a historical notion of Shala Vicha V'Yageicha to validate Hanukkah candles. But maybe something that's a siag, something that's there to defend the Torah itself, maybe that has a different status, and Rav Ivya would agree with that. And maybe the Gemara is a proof for the Rambam's position. So there's a lot of question as to how to interpret those two Gemaras, but there is at least some addressing in Chazal of this question of what's the relationship of Lo Saser and new Dinim D'Rabbanan that are created. So far, so good? Everyone on the same page? So, assuming, let's say, the Rambam's position, so then the question is, how do we defend him against the notion that we should treat all Dinim D'Rabbanan like Daraisas, because they are all connected to this idea of Lo Saser? How do we have the justification to have any attitude of kula to Dinim D'Rabbanan? So there are basically two schools of thought. There are two broad approaches to this question, how to answer it. And the first approach itself breaks up into two different approaches, version A and version B. So let's first mention that. And this is the approach which you can find, for example, in the Lecha Mishnah. Lecha Mishnah over there in Halchas Mamrim quotes from earlier sources, from the Tashbetz and others, that perhaps the answer is Kach Hisnu. That essentially two words, what that means is that the rabbis made it that way. And basically, you could have said that, yes, leave everything by itself, and indeed, that would have been the story, Safek Rabbanim would have been L'chumra, because it would have been treated like it did Min HaTorah. But the rabbis intentionally set it up that way so that that should be the practice. That they created their dinim with such a condition, that's what we mean by the words kach hisnu, this is how they conditioned it, that didn't drabanan, when they innovated them, they said, these are the rules, any suffik in these matters would be treated lakula. So that basically means that by default, we would have said suffik drabanan lachumra, but it was intentionally part of the plan that we deviate from that default and we make drabanan's lakula. Now, I have to clarify that a little bit, because the question is, what really is the default? It's easier to say this position if you say that isn't really the default in the first place. So there is a machlokes, I think this is what you're about to get to. Right. So I think it's what you're about to get to, that as we're talking about Shmeisa topics here, so this is a major discussion of the Sheikh Shmeisa. What is the authority of the rule of Safik Daraisa L'chumra? Right? This notion that we have to be machmir by dinim daraisa, is that din daraisa, or is that midrabanan? Do we say that min haTorah we are allowed to be makil by sveikos, and Chazal were the ones who came in and created a rule of safek daraisa l'chumra, or do we say that din itself is min haTorah? So that was a major machlokas. Again, this is a big Sheish Maisa topic. So the position of the Rashba, another Rishonim, is that Safek Daraisa L'chumra is a Din Min HaTorah, that's the default position. While the position of the Rambam, which we don't work out here, is that Chazal made this rule, that the Torah itself does not require us to worry about Sveikos, and it's a Din Drabanan, Safek Daraisa L'chumra. So if one takes that formulation, again, it works well that it's the Rambam's position. If one takes that formulation, then it's even easier to say kach hisnu, that they didn't even have to deviate from the default. They left it in the default. That essentially Chazal were the ones who insisted we be machmer by deraisas, so they didn't apply that to their own dinim. They only applied that to dinim min haTorah, and they didn't tell us this extra chiddush of safek l'chumra by dinim derabanan. So that, if that is indeed the default, then it's even easier. Either way, you could take this position. But the question is, what's the default? The default, Safik L'chumra, and they had to step in and say, hold on, for our din, we can be Mekel. Or maybe the default always was Safik L'kula, and they just didn't add any extra requirement of Chumra by their own din. But one way or another, it's the same conclusion, that this was an intentional strategy of Chazal to leave dinim d'rabanan L'kula. So then the question is, why? So if that was their policy, this was the decision, so why should it be? So here's where it breaks down into two possibilities. One possibility is to say that we're worried about a different issue. We're worried about a Torah prohibition of Baal Tosef. And we know the Torah tells us we're not allowed to add on to the Torah. So it's a big question what that means. It's interesting because it's an Issur Doraisa, and we don't really have any clear position of what constitutes Baal Tosef. What is it, adding on a little bit of a mitzvah, doing a mitzvah again, creating a new mitzvah? It's not really clear what constitutes Baal Tosef or Baal Tigra. There are entire Sfarim devoted to this topic. It's a big debate in the Rishonim as to what would be a violation of Baal Tosef. But on the surface, it's a good question how rabbinic law exists with Baal Tosef. That it sounds like that's at least a worthy question to ask. If the Torah says you can't add on anything, so how do we have Chazal creating new laws? It would seem, again, there's what to discuss in the Rishonim as to what actually is the violation of Baal Tosef, but before you get to seeing all the opinions, it's a fair question to ask. There seems to be a conflict between the existence of new dinim midrabanan and the prohibition of Baal Tosef. So this issue is extensively debated in the Sfarim, but the Rambam's position, as he expresses in Hilchos Mamrim later on, in Perek Beis Halacha Tes, the Rambam talks about what he thinks is an issue for the question of avoiding Baal Tosef. And there he gives an example, his go-to example when talking about Dinim D'Rabbanan is chicken and milk. In the Torah, the Isser of Basar B'Chalav involves only beef, Basar Behema, and the idea that we avoid also mixing chicken and milk, Basar Of, so that's a Din D'Rabbanan. So that example often comes up in the Rambam's writings and elsewhere as an example of a Din D'Rabbanan. So the Rambam says, chicken cheeseburgers, Chazal have the authority to prohibit that, but they have to be careful. They can't create the impression that this is a din min haTorah. That if they're clear that this is a new siag that they are imposing, fine, that's within their authority. But if they're going to blur the distinction, and they're going to give you the impression that this is a din min haTorah, so then that potentially is a violation of Baal Tosa.
Would that be disagreeing with those
Rishonim
who understand that as machta, the whole thing was they made it up?
Well, the Rambam is definitely in disagreement. Yeah. What did he say, that they did make it up or they didn't make it up?
Which position? No, that they originally said it was a deraisa, and then they would say later, we were just...
Well, so the Rambam understands it as just a way to remember it. The definition of asmachta is a big machlok, because the Ritva in Rosh Hashanah says that there really is an aspect min haTorah within the asmachta, and says anyone who doesn't believe like that is a min, which is the Rambam's position. The whole controversial question as to what exactly the impact of Asmachta is. So we usually assume, like more like the Rambam, with all due respect to the Ritva, that probably that Asmachta usually is Drabbanan's. Although it leaves enough ambiguity, like we mentioned a little bit earlier, that we don't know 100% what the Gemara is getting at when it says that something is an Asmachta. So here, the Rambam's position is that they are Dinim Drabbanan. And it's an interesting question that he's basically saying that this is a crucial strategy to avoid Baal Tosef. And they say, for example, that it was 150 years ago, there was a city in Europe that it was approaching Pesach time, and they had very little food in this city. And most of the food they had was kidneys. You have to assume they had enough to survive, but barely more than that. And it was going to be an incredibly difficult situation if they didn't eat kidneys on Pesach. And apparently the story is that they asked Reb Chaim Brisker, and Reb Chaim said that not only are they allowed to eat the kidneys on Pesach, but it would be an Isser Daraisa if they didn't. Because the assumption was that if one were to take this minig and treat it with the attitude that you would use for a Din Min haTorah, to be so machmir that even B'tzorach Gadol, where they were, I guess, close to Platzing, because Mamash B'tzorach Nefesh, then it would apply even if it was deraisa, but it was, must have been somewhere in between the zone of actual pikuach nefesh and extreme suffering. But if one were to be so machmir on this din, as if it were a din min haTorah, so that's what the Rambam writes, that's a problem of Baal Tosef. That essentially it's working off this premise that the attitude that we have, that we're more machmir by deraisas than by dinim derabanan and by minhagim, that is a necessary framework to save us from Baal Tosef. So therefore, it wouldn't be right in a situation like this to be so machmer and kittios and essentially to treat it like it's a din min haTorah. So a little bit relevant to your question, it is an interesting question to ask that if this is true, that Safek Drabbanan Lekula is a tool that we have to help us avoid Baal Tosef, so then is it a successful tool or not? So on the one hand, we have many dinim now which we don't know. Are they deraisa derabanan? And there are many svarim, both older svarim and more recent svarim, which are fully devoted to... recently saw a contemporary say it was a three-volume set. The entire three-volume set was about looking at various dinim, trying to figure out whether they're deraisa derabanan. So it seems like there's a lot that we're mesupik about. And I'm curious, Sefer, older svarim, talk about this. The Ara, the Rabbanan, there are a number of entire Svarim that are devoted to figuring out specific din and whether they are deraisa derabanan. So if it's crucial that we maintain the distinction, we're in a little bit of trouble as far as that's concerned, because we seem to have a lot of sfeikus. On the other hand, the nature of the principle, we can see how it works, because since we have this idea of Safek derabanan lekula, so as you know, if you're a student of halacha in any area, it's impossible to discuss almost any shiloh without first determining whether something is deraisa derabanan, because it almost always affects the halacha. So this principle of safek derabanan lekula, because it has such a broad impact on halachic practice, forces us to constantly be aware of what's a din deraisa, what's a din derabanan, or at least constantly keep it in conversation. And if that was the idea, that we have to keep a clear distinction between the two, otherwise we're in danger of Baal Tosef, so then we could see perhaps how that principle is going to play out. That could be the idea, that Safek Derabanan Lekula is there to serve that purpose. Okay, so far so good? Everything makes sense. So that's one. That's basically 1A. So the first approach of Kachisnu, that Chazal intentionally made their Dinim Lekula, could be because of that, could be because of the issue of Baal Tosef. Now, 1B, the second possible reason to say they did it like this, is to suggest that that is all that was necessary. That goes to the question of what is the function of a Din D'Rabbanan. That if we say that a Din D'Rabbanan primarily is a siyag, that it's mostly there to serve as a safeguard, to serve as a protective measure against violating an Issa D'Raisa, so then you could say, all right, then the fence is high enough when we're just dealing with the Vados. We don't have to actually deal with Sfeikus as well. So just to give a rough example, let's say if you say that Bishul Akum is prohibited because we want to avoid intermarriage, so we could say, all right, it's enough to avoid things that we know for sure are Bishul Akum, that will be enough of a fence. We don't have to also stay away from something that we don't even know is Bishul Akum. It's going to serve enough of a purpose, just avoiding that which we know. Or, say, go back to the chicken cheeseburger example. If the point of chicken cheeseburgers is to keep us from eating beef cheeseburgers, so we could say that it's enough that we should avoid when we know we have the chicken cheeseburger. If we're not sure this might have chicken cheeseburger in it, then that might be more than is necessary in order to keep us away from the beef cheeseburgers. Hi.
That might work very well with the random suffix about how you can't use suffix to get rid of an institution.
Perhaps. If that's the nature of the din, then to say that once we know the din exists, then it doesn't make sense to erode it completely and have it disappear. It would be consistent with that, probably, yeah. So this idea is premised on a few things, right? It's premised on the idea that that's essentially the breakdown, that the Raisas have an inherent issue to it, and the Rabbanans are more there to protect Daraisas. And this connects with a notion that you find, which is often associated with the Nesivas HaMishpat. The Nesivas doesn't exactly say this, but that's how he's interpreted, and many later Achronim accepted this distinction. And they basically understood that a Din Daraisa has an inherent quality to it. So let's say Chazer, the Torah prohibits us from eating Chazer, that means that Chazer is inherently spiritually bad. So therefore, that's what we would call, in Brisker terminology, an Isser Chafza. The item has spiritual poison in it. So therefore, if that's the case, even if we're not sure that that's actually what it is, we still want to avoid that because it could be harmful to us. And that notion is correlated with the idea that certain Torah prohibitions, even if we violate them b'shogeg, there isn't necessarily an onesh, but there's an idea of a kapara, whether it's a karban or something else, because there's still a spiritual stain, even if you didn't intentionally violate the Torah prohibition. But dinim d'rabbanan, according to this approach, don't have any inherent quality to them. They are there as protective measures. So therefore, A, that means that they don't have any inherent danger. They're there as a step between us and the inherent danger. So therefore, that means that we're not as worried if we don't know that that actually is the item, this actually is the Issa D'Rabbanan. We're not as scared about it because there isn't any inherent problem there. It's just a buffer zone between us and the real problem. But also, to take this thinking a little further, it might mean that we're not doing anything if we are unintentionally involved with a Issa D'Rabbanan. Because to say that an Issa D'Oraisa is an Issa Chepsa, there's something inherently bad there, that allows a contrast to say that when it comes to an Issa D'Rabbanan, there isn't anything inherently bad, but rather it's what we call, again, in Brisker terminology, an Issa Gavra. That the individual is told, you have to stay away from the chicken cheeseburger. You cannot eat the chicken cheeseburger. Chicken cheeseburger is not inherently bad. It's neutral. It was neutral before Chazal came along. It's neutral after Chazal came along. But now, after Chazal came along, there's an Issa D'Rabbanan for you to eat this chicken cheeseburger. which also flows from the idea that if you say the whole authority for Dinim Drabanan is the Pasuk of Lo Sasser, so then what does that mean? Who is bound by Lo Sasser? So Jewish adults are bound by Lo Sasser. People who are obligated to keep the Torah are bound by Lo Sasser. But the rest of existence isn't necessarily subject to the Pasuk of Lo Sasser. So Lo Sasser means that we as Jewish adults have to listen to rabbinic authority. But the chicken cheeseburger doesn't have any mitzvah on it. There's no ability of Chazal to change the nature of the chicken cheeseburger. It stays the same as it was before and as it is after. It's just that we have a prohibition to eat it. That's the Isser Gavra. So, therefore, the concept of a kapara that goes with a daraisa because there's some spiritual stain, that's not there for an Isser Drabanan. That essentially the Isser Drabanan is neutral, so if you didn't know that it was an Isser Drabanan in the first place, then there's no stain. That's essentially what the Nesiva says, that there's no idea of a kapara for an Isser Drabanan b'shogeg. That if you inadvertently violate an Isser Drabanan, so then there's no need to fix it. And that's how many later Achronim explain that it was just a prohibition on you to eat the chicken cheeseburger, and there's nothing inherently damaging in it. And if you did it b'shogeg, so then there isn't anything left to worry about. And another way of formulating this idea, question about that? So that's a question. So the question, what the Nesivus means. The Nesivus says you don't need a kapara for a shogeg derabanan. Many understand that to mean you don't need to do tshuva for it, that there isn't anything at all. Some distinguish a little bit that tshuva, yes, but a kapara suggests something more. So that's an open question whether there is a concept of a tshuva for a shogeg derabanan. So essentially, what's also emerging here is that he's characterizing, the Achronim say like this, are characterizing an Isser Drabanan as an Isser Mered, that basically it's a prohibition of rebellion. That Lo Sasser means that you are not allowed to rebel against Chazal. So if you rebel against Chazal, so then that's a problem. But if you're not rebelling, you didn't even know that there was an Isser here, so then there's essentially no Avera. And if there's no Avera, there is nothing to worry about. And that's why you could say Safek Drabanan Lekula by these ideas. There's a similar approach, for example, the Minchas Elazar, the Munkat Rebbe writes in his Tshuvas, says that we have this idea, for example, that we don't say a Gezera Le Gezera, right? That we normally don't have one Gezera on top of another. So why is that the case? So you don't have, there are many different explanations why that is. It's a whole interesting discussion to have, but it's a whole different topic. We'd have to come back and discuss that topic separately, but just to discuss the overlap here, that the way the Menachas Elazar explains Gzeira L'Gzeira is that that would mean an Issa D'Rabbanan on top of an Issa D'Rabbanan. Now, normally, an Issa D'Rabbanan is there to save us from an Issa D'Raisa. So what kind of an Issa D'Raisa are we afraid of? Presumably not amazed, because if you're intending on violating an Isser Daraisa, then you're going to do it anyway. You're not going to worry about the Drabanan. So Drabanans are not there to stop the Mezidim. Drabanans are there to stop the Shogigin, are there to make sure that even inadvertently you're not going to lead to a situation of Shogig where you violate an Isser Daraisa. So if that's the purpose of a Gezerah, to save you from Shogig, so it says the Menachas Elazar, there's no need to save you from a Shogig Drabanan. Because a shogeg drabanan essentially is not a concern. Is it nothing or is it just less? That's a little bit of a question. But it's not enough of a concern to justify a new din, because to violate a drabanan b'shogeg is not going to add up to that much or anything at all. If you say it's just a prohibition of rebellion, that's how it would emerge. And in fact, there are some who say that this whole issue the Ramban has, that you're violating any drabanan, when you violate any drabanan is violating a daraisa because of Lo Sasser. So some formulated that even according to the Rambam, Lo Sasser doesn't mean that you violate Nisa daraisa any time you violate a drabanan. It could mean that the only time you would violate Lo Sasser is if you do so through an act of rebellion. So if this person who wants to eat the chicken cheeseburger, if he does it because he's starving, or he does it because he just can't resist chicken cheeseburgers, so then, in Chanami, that's a Din D'Rabbanan. But if he does it because, hey, why should I say this? If unfortunately, people do have this attitude. You know, why should I stay away from a chicken cheeseburger? It's only a rabbinic prohibition, and they can't tell me what to do. So that would taka be a violation d'orais. So that would be a violation of lo sasur. But it doesn't mean that every d'rabbanan is automatically a d'oraisa, and therefore that's not necessarily going to pose such a problem for the Rambam's position. So this possible approach could rest heavily on this kind of distinction between d'oraisas and d'rabbanans, that they have this fundamental difference. So far, so good. So it plays out in a lot of cases. We don't have time to talk about all of them. Just to give one example, which is particularly interesting, there's a Tosus in Yevamos and Davzayin in Midbeis that has a distinction where Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has a fascinating way of explaining it. That we know that, let's say, if a Kohen finds himself in a room with a dead body, so the Kohen has to run out of the room. He has to separate himself as quickly as he can. So Tosfos says, if it's a Tuma d'Rabbanan, so then he has to leave, but he doesn't have to run, he can walk. So that's a funny distinction. How are we drawing and have a speedometer on him? There's a certain number of miles per hour he has to go for the rice, and it's less for the rabbanan. What's the distinction between running and walking? So Bochanan explains that the difference between a derais and a rabbanan, according to this logic, is that deraises are inherently dangerous. So the Kohen has to leave right away to not be harmed by the spiritual problem of the deraisa. But the rabbanans is an iser merit. It's a prohibition of rebelling. You're not allowed to defy rabbinic law. So if you're leaving the room, you're not rebelling. It doesn't matter how fast you're leaving the room, because as long as you're leaving, so you are complying with rabbinic law, it doesn't make a difference whether you are running or walking. And one could compare this perhaps to the difference between a fire and a fire drill. That if there's a fire, so everyone leaves the building as quickly as possible, because the fire is harmful and nobody wants to have to show them get hit by the fire. But if there's a fire drill, and you know there's no fire, so you can't stay in the room because you have to comply with the fire drill, so everyone gets up and leaves. But they leave slowly because they know there isn't any real danger, but at the same time, they can't not comply. So the compliance means you leave, but you don't necessarily have to leave quickly. So essentially, that distinction seems to be what Rav Chanan is getting at, which reflects this issue. Now, I should mention that this was a debate because a lot of Achronim accepted this, but not everyone accepted this distinction. And prominent among those who did not accept this distinction was Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel, in an essay in Asfin Daraisa, Rav Yosef Engel says he thinks this whole principle that so many Achronim like, he thinks it's not true, that it is possible for an Isser Darabanan to be an Isser Chefza. It is possible for an Isser Darabanan to inherently define an object. And he bases this on various statements in Chazal that suggest that when Chazal make a declaration, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu signs off on it. So basically, even if something was neutral before Chazal came along, once they made their new din, then God signs off on it, and now it takes on a whole different nature, which could affect all kinds of issues, also a whole other topic. But that could be what's going on, and that therefore, in his understanding, there isn't really such a distinction, and Yisurim D'Rabbanan also could have inherent problems to them. Now, just to say the other half of the equation, so it's also interesting, it's not necessarily connected, but Rav Yosef Engel, in another essay, is also the one who writes that a siag is not exclusively the province of D'Rabbanan, that it is possible, he has an often quoted essay in the Sefer Lekech Tov in Klal Ches, where he says that it could be that even a din min haTorah could be a siag, and that there are mitzvos min haTorah which are there really just to protect other din min haTorah. Sorry? All kinds of them. He starts the piece is called Imatsinu Siag Daraisa. Do you ever find anywhere in the Torah that there's a din which is a siag? Deal. Let me think about it for a minute, and he lists off 20 examples or so of dinim. Each one is according to one view and Rishonim or the other. Very few of them are really such slam dunks, but that if you take this view, you take that view, you come up with a list which dinim dan Torah that are really there to serve a protective function. So would that make a difference? It's a good question. It's also a whole other shir. So we're just trying to stick to this one topic, but that's whether there's an impact, a practical halachic ramification of saying, Safek That saying that a deraisa could be a siag, that's a whole discussion in itself. But in any event, so this is a second approach of the first approach, a second half of the first approach, to say kach hisnu, that Chazal set up things this way in order to serve their purposes. There wasn't the need to go any further and to be machmir on tzveikos. So a second approach or a third approach, but a whole different approach outside the kach hisnu, is to say that this interpretation of the Rambam, that looking to lo sasser means that dinim derabbanans are automatically dinim deraisa, is really not mukhrach, it's really not necessary. And the Meshech Chachma, for example, has a parable to explain this. You could say it a little bit differently, we'll say it a little differently than he does. He says, let's say, for example, he talks about a king and a prince. In our framework, let's talk about a teacher and a principal. See, here in high school. So you have a school. So a school has a teacher and a principal. So the principal is the boss. And the principal hires the teachers and gives the teachers authority. So the authority of the teacher comes from the principal. But we still know that they're different. We know that what the teacher says isn't automatically whatever the principal says. There's still a clear difference in authority between the principal and the teacher. It just means that the teacher is the source, the teacher's authority is sourced from the principal. So if you defy the teacher, if the teacher tries to tell you to do something and you say, no, you can't tell me what to do, you're going to have to answer to the principal because the principal gives the authority to the teacher. But it doesn't mean that there isn't any difference between them, and we can still clearly see what that difference is. So too, when it comes to lo sasser means that the Torah gives the authority to Chazal. So if we were to defy Chazal, if we were to say that we're not interested in what you have to say, you'd have to answer to God, you'd have to answer to the Torah. But that doesn't mean that the Torah and Chazal are the same. We clearly can distinguish between them, and it's justified to have different levels of authority. And it seems clear that that is the Rambam's view, just to mention two examples. That as much as we're worried that the Rambam is blurring the Raisas and the Rabbanans, but he does clearly maintain some distinction. So, for example, the Rambam in Hishrashim, when he says that he's going to give you some rules as to how we come up with 613 mitzvos, so one of the principles he says is, I'm not going to count mitzvos that are the Rabbanan. And we say, Tariq mitzvos nemru l'moshe b'sinai, that there are 613 mitzvos given to Moshe, so those 613 have to include mitzvos that are separate from the Drabbanans. We're not going to include that. Now, some of the Monahan mitzvos did go farther than the Rambam and said that even mitzvos Drabbanan could end up being counted as part of the 613 because they had a view that went past the Rambam to the other side of the Ramban. That actually does assume that Dinim Drabbanan take on a status like a Din Min HaTorah in the fullest sense of the word. But the Rambam doesn't go that far. The Rambam says that when we're counting 613 mitzvahs d'oraisa, we're not going to count mitzvahs d'rabbanan. Yes, the authority telling us we have to listen to them comes from the Torah, but that doesn't make them among the mitzvahs Min HaTorah. And to give another example of that, the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos, when he comments on the idea of the notion of making a bracha on a derabbanan, we mentioned before, the language of the Gemara of Heichan Sivanu, where do we find that the Torah commands us to light the Hanukkah candles, and you give this answer of lo sasser. So the Rambam explains in Hilchos Brachos what that means. He says that when we say the words Asher Kitshana Mitzvosa V'Sivanu L'Hadlik Ner Shel Hanukkah, what we really have in mind is Asher Kitshana B'Mitzvosa V'Sivanu L'shmoa el elu shesivanu l'hadlik ner shel Chanukah. That God's commandment was to listen to those who said, light Chanukah candles. But it's not that we think that the Torah told us to light Chanukah candles. We understand that the Torah didn't give that commandment. The Torah gave the commandment to listen to Chazal. And Chazal said to light Chanukah candles. And when we say the bracha of Asher Kishara B'Tzvosa V'Tzivanu, that's what we have in mind to listen. And in fact, the Yerushalmi has a different girsa of Al Mitzvah Sekenen. There's a general mitzvah to listen to the authorities. And that translates practically into lighting Chanukah candles. And again, there are those Rishonim who would go even further than the Rambam and see it actually as a din min ha-Torah once it was created. But the Rambam, despite connecting it to Lo Sasser, doesn't go that far. So it's easier to say within the Rambam that yes, Lo Sasser essentially is the authority for Didim Drabanan, but that still allows for a clear difference between the two, and to have practical ramifications such as Safek Drabanan Lakula, that would still be acceptable. So does that make sense? I think so. I could take another minute to review if we're deciding to daven here. So everyone here... interested in staying for Mincha, we'll see if we can grab one person. So if so, I'd like to just quickly review what we spoke about. Unless there are any questions? Any questions so far? Yes, sir?
In terms of the one approach that we said that most deem derabanan is mostly a siyah, so therefore the fence, like, it only needs to be this high. So what happens if I'm deem derabanan that come out of, like,
Yeah, it's a good question. So first of all, it gets into the whole question of what is the authority for Ner Chanukah, which is a major discussion. Come to me, I guess, in 11 months, we're just after Chanukah now, but there's a major discussion as to whether the authority really allows for Ner Chanukah, because the assumption is that a siyag itself is not only a category, but it justifies the whole enterprise of Dinam Drabanan, because the Torah tells us in Achrimos, Ushmartim is Mishmarti, and the Gemara understands from there, Asum Mishmaris and Mishmarti, which sounds like there is a directive to create a Siyag. So that might be the other half of the equation. We talk about Dinam Drabanan, so we need two things. We need to know, first of all, why is it binding? And that's where we talk about Lasasra and the like. And we also have to know what's their justification to get involved in the first place. And that could be what we find from something like Asum Shmarti. So it's a question then whether Hanukkah candles fit into that model or not. Some suggest yes, it's a siyag for Amuna, that it keeps us, it's there to strengthen faith. That's also a siyag. Others say that it's derived from Purim. The Purim is derived from Pesach, it's a Kavu Chomer. And that the Gemara says in Megillah that Chazal were able to institute Purim because they had a Kavu Chomer from Pesach. Pesach was Avdus Lacheris, Misa Lachayim Lakol Shekein, and that Hanukkah comes with Purim. It's a whole discussion what exactly justifies the whole institution of Hanukkah and Purim and the like. And so that's a question. So just a quick review, and then we'll daven. So we talked about this question of what does Safek Drabanan Lakula mean? Just that there is a principle, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, that it was also from Holach Achara Mekel, and the question of practically what does that mean, that we mentioned some limitations, the Ran's comment in Sachim, that we wouldn't apply it to get rid of a Din Drabanan, we wouldn't apply it in a way that is completely illogical, and we perhaps would be machmir if it's not much tircha. And then we talked about the question, this whole debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, what is the source for Din Drabanan, that the Rambam says it's based on the Pasuk Lo Sasser, and the Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says that's just legislative authority. How do you know that there is also, that's just judiciary authority. How do you know there's also legislative authority? And also, how can we sustain a distinction of stuff like the Ramban and the Kula if you're telling me essentially they're all going to be the races anyway? So we mentioned, we'll call it three approaches, how you could have such a distinction. The first approach is Kach Hisnu, Chazal made the rules this way. Either they added a clause that should go Lakula, or that was the default. It was Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Rashba, what the default was. But Chazal made it this way on purpose. Why did they make it this way? So the first possibility is because of Baal Tosef, because the Rambam says we risk Baal Tosef if we blur the distinction between Daraisas and Darabanans. And the second possibility is because if Darabanans are a fence, so then the fence doesn't have to be that high. The fence can be effective by just prohibiting definite situations. It doesn't have to prohibit Sveikas as well. And then we talked about how that also relates to the possibility that Dinim Darabanan are not inherently bad, they're just there to keep us from rebelling, while Dinim Daraisa are inherently bad, there's a greater need to avoid any possibility of an Issa Daraisa. With Darabanan, it's enough that we just avoid the situations that we know are actually rebellious, that we know are actually problematic. And we discuss some ramifications of that and some applications of that. And the third possibility is to say, like the Meshech Chachma articulated, that just because the authority comes from the Torah, it doesn't mean that there's no distinction to be made. And we gave the example, he talks about a king and a prince, we talked about a teacher and a principal, that the principal hires the teacher and gives authority to the teacher, but we still understand that they're different. So if you mess with the teacher, you tell the teacher you're not going to listen, so then you have to account, you have to answer to the principal. But we still know that what the teacher says is not the same as what the principal says, and so too the Torah is a different level of authority than Chazal, even if the Torah backs up Chazal's authority. We mentioned the possibility you only violate the Issa D'Oraisa if you say that you're not accepting Chazal's authority at all, not if you do it to the Te'ovon. And then we mentioned just two examples of this distinction within the Rambam, that one, the Rambam says he's not going to count mitzvahs to Rabbanan as part of the Tariq mitzvahs, because he does see a distinction, and also he explains this distinction in Halachos Brachos. This is when we say, Asher Kirsan Mitzvosav Tzivana L'Havik Ne'ashva Chanukah. What we have in mind is, Asher Kirsan Mitzvosav Tzivana L'Shmoa L'Elush Tzivana L'Havik Ne'ashva Chanukah, but not that we perceive Hanukkah candles as actually being written in the Torah itself. Another example of where he sees that distinction, and that that's how it plays out. All right, thank you very much. Who'd like to daven? Daven? Okay.